Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Reinbold from the shores of Hawaii. Jeff, we're going to restart our State of the Franchise series this week because it's a little bit quiet. It's gone a little bit quiet on news, isn't it? Everything's, I guess, gearing up now towards the NFL draft at the end of April.
Everything here is about speculation and in the draft, and a lot of talk today about Cleveland and what they're going to do with the first pick.
What do you think, Jeff? They got to go because so much has been said about Saquon Barkley as the running back out of Penn State, arguably the best player in the draft, and then you've got Quentin Nelson as well, the guard. Maybe those two players actually rate higher than the quarterbacks, but we could see as many as five quarterbacks going in round one. And feels like with the Browns having missed on Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson, feels like they would lean towards quarterback. How do you think it's going to play out, that first pick?
Well, that was all the speculation today, that everybody's talking about, you know, that they'll take a quarterback with that first pick. Now, here's the thing, Neil, you know, when you try and sort through all of this and how much of it's disinformation, how much of it's truth, you really don't know. But, you know, you've got a guy that's won games in the NFL now, quarterback for you, but what's the contract look like? Are they trying to renegotiate with him and extend him over a longer period of time so that they have a guy, and then take the best player in the draft, which is what I think they should do. Now, the speculation today was all about taking a quarterback, but the issue is, in a lot of people's minds, is Josh Rosen, who I think is the best quarterback in the draft, does he even want to play in Cleveland? And interesting, I heard an ex-NFL player today say, you don't have the hammer very many times in the negotiation with the team, and when you are a rookie and you're possibly the number one player picked in the draft, you have the hammer. Just like John Elway did, and just like Eli Manning did, and when you have the hammer, you better use it.
I think the thing that's interesting about this, Jeff, as they try and make their minds up in Cleveland, you're right. They've got Tyrod Taylor, who has been a 8-9 win per season quarterback, and that's going to be a huge upgrade on what the Browns had last year. Especially when you look at Tyrod Taylor, the type of player he is, and he doesn't really turn the ball over. And yeah, Deshaun Kizer was a bit of a turnover machine last year. Turnovers have been a huge problem for the Cleveland Browns. So you can see why they would be content with Tyrod Taylor for a period of time. But also, I mean, you mentioned Josh Rosen there, but there doesn't seem to be a clear-cut consensus number one, because I've heard the same said about Sam Darnold. I've heard people get all gooey about Josh Allen because he can throw the ball 80 yards. Baker Mayfield is getting attention. There's a lot of quarterbacks that could go in round one of this draft, but each of them seems to have some spots on them, and I don't know if one is way out in front of the others like we would have seen in previous years.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think, from my mind, Josh Rosen's the best quarterback in the draft. I just think he's the most pro-ready right now.
But right.
He continues to make comments and just he comes off as a kid that's, he claims, he talks about it himself. He says, I'm a millennial. I want to know why. And, it's one of those deals. That's not exactly the way you negotiate yourself into the first pick in the draft.
They want robots, Jeff. They want robots that fit into the system.
Well, I tell you what, they want guys that do what they're told and what they're coached to do. And you don't have a lot of time to explain why every day about, this is where you have to put your feet and this is where we want your eyes. So Josh Allen is the one that was the speculation today. And, that would be a real Cleveland pick to me, because here's a guy that, even in against Mountain West competition didn't, separate himself to a tremendous extent. And yes, he does have the biggest arm in the draft. Yes, he is a good athlete. Yes, there's a lot of boxes you can tick. But then on the other hand, you say, you're at Wyoming and you're playing against Mountain West competition and Wrigley, you know, there's too many questions to me. So, you know, again, what helps Josh Allen is Carson Wentz.
Right.
That sounds crazy, but that's the comparison that people are trying to make.
Yeah, Jeff alluded to the level of play at Wyoming, and Josh Allen completed just 56% of his passes. So, Jeff, he was behind a poor offensive line, and I think some of the receivers struggled to handle his passes, but that's still a number that makes you kind of have some concerns, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, 56%. You know, you want a college quarterback to be up in the mid-60s minimally, there are a lot of things that make you say you like the kid, but there are a lot of things that make you say, you know, 56%. That's one of the things that's really, because accuracy, Neil, is so important when you get to the next level, because those corners can close so fast, the windows are so tight, and your decision-making has to be on spot because, you know, the defenses are so quick.
We are going to look today at the Chicago Bears, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the San Francisco 49ers in our State of the Franchise series. We'll take your questions in the mailbag as well. But before we get to that, one more piece of news, Jeff, and it's not really news. It's that speculation. We are in this speculation part of the off season. I mean, here we are, 2 months removed from the Super Bowl. We still don't know what's happening with Rob Gronkowski. Will he retire? Will he move on? And now there's a story that came out via thebiglead.com, which talked about potential of Gronk being traded by the New England Patriots. Gronk's 28 years old. He's got 2 years left on his contract. Jeff, all I would say is that Belichick has traded away Chandler Jones in the past, Jamie Collins, Jimmy Garoppolo. He likes to try and get value, but is he going to trade the Gronk?
Well, you know, I don't know. That one I got to see to believe. But, you know, there is, you know, if you look at the track record and you go back even further than that, you know, you're talking about some of the best players that he had. William Dennis, you know, you let go of, you know, Tyler. I mean, there have been a lot of really, really good players that he seems to have a feel for when a guy is starting to hit that decline in his career. Mm-hmm. And when he has the most valuable, he can get the most value for him. And that's when he pulls the trigger on these kinds of trades. So would it surprise me? Yes. Would it shock me? No.
Jeff, one more thing I wanted to talk about. It probably feels a little bit out of date now because we're quite a few weeks removed from the NFL Combine. But the story broke over the last couple of days that Ohio State linebacker Jerome Baker was asked by an NFL coach, what would you do if I punched you in the face right now? Jeff, this comes off the back of Darius Geis, the running back, got asked if he likes men. I mean, I understand that as coaches you want to know the type of player you are bringing into your team. And apparently Jerome Baker replied to the coach that we would be in a fight if you punched me in the face. And the coach apparently liked the answer. But you're a coach. You've been sitting there trying to evaluate players you're going to bring in. You have to try and push their buttons. But is it getting a bit ridiculous, Jeff, some of these questions that these prospects are being asked?
And I think so. You know, I really believe so. And, Neil, that's an example of the kind of shock question that you try and give a kid to see how he reacts to it, particularly if he has, you know, if you think he might have some sort of issue with coaching or anger management or, you know, anything like that. You want to see what the reaction is going to be. But, you know, I think there's a limit to all of it. It's the overhype in some ways and the overevaluation that I think goes on in the draft. And, you know, I've sat in those rooms. I've done the interviews. I've been through that whole thing. And I just think there's a better way than coming up with those kinds of questions to try and, you know, challenge a kid or try and see what he's made of.
Surely you know the answer as well. Anyone who gets punched in the face, I mean, surely the coach knew the answer. I mean, if I punch you in the face, Jeff, we're going to have a problem, right?
I would think so.
I mean, it's just bizarre. I mean, I think it's just like, again, an indication of how much these prospects have to go through, Jeff. And it's worth bearing in mind when we get to, I don't know, November or December in the season, because we see that rookie wall is real because they're worn out mentally and physically by the time they get to training camp almost, because they've been through, they haven't really had an off season, these prospects that are going out for the draft.
No, you know, think about it, you know, these kids, they go to you know, their college, they're in summer school, most of them, at the big programs all summer long, which means they're working out with the weight coach all summer long. They don't have any time off in the summer. Then they go into training camp. Then they go into a 13-game season, and they play a bowl game, most of them. Some of them play two or three games if they're in the national playoffs in either 1AA or Division I. Then they go into preparation for the combine and the draft, and so there is no time for them. And, you know, here's where I think something's got to give a little bit, you know, is these kids, as you know, are now, as soon as their college season's over, they're going to Florida, they're going to New Arizona, they're going all over the country to train, not only physically train for the combine, but to train in, you know, how you handle interviews, how you, you know, all of that stuff. I mean, and so these kids have been through probably 10 or 15 mock interviews before they ever sit down with an NFL coach. And, you know, it's to the point now where they're so prepared, you know, that you know, I'm not sure you get really a true evaluation of a kid's, whether it's his native athletic skills or his, you know, how he's going to react in a new environment, because they're so well managed and so well prepared for this, which they should be, because it's you're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of millions. There's difference between drafted in the second round or the sixth round.
Jeff, I wonder if we'll ever see a day, and really it would have to be somebody like a Josh Rosen or a Sam Darnold. I wonder if we will ever see the day where a player just says, you know what, I'm not doing any of it. I'm just going to, there's my college film. Take a look at what kind of player I was in college. I don't think we ever will, because I don't think anyone wants to buck the system, because it has become quite an off-season dog and pony show. I don't think we'll ever see that, but it would be relevant, because really your game film is your most telling part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, that you always got to go back to the tape, you know, and you know, Bill Parcells said it a bunch of years ago, you are what you put on tape, and you can't deny that. Now, you can jump high, and you can run fast, and you can, you know, answer right, and you can do all those things and look a guy in the eye and shake hands with a firm handshake and all of it, but the bottom line is, what do you put on tape? What did you do as a player? And that's, you know, that's what never changes. And that's where I think, you know, I think combine is, you know, we could go around, I mean, we could have a whole conversation on the combine, but, you know, talk about the 40-yard dash. Just everybody, the 40-yard dash has become the 100 meters at the Olympic Games. I mean, it is like the showpiece of the entire draft. And it might have less to do with whether a player's going to succeed or not succeed than any test he takes. That's what's so bizarre about the whole thing.
Well, wouldn't you, I mean, generally as a coach, wouldn't you be wanting to see how a player moves? So the shuttle runs and the three cone drills, Jeff, those change of direction things, aren't they more football relevant?
Yeah, they are. But here's the thing, Neil, and I think this is really important that people understand this. Football is a game of reactions. It's short burst, you know, quick, you know, movement drills.
Yep.
And when I say drills, I'm talking about, you know, you're always reacting to something. You're reacting to another player. You're reacting to the snap of the ball. You're reacting, you know, it's a reaction game. But the cones don't move, right? So there's no reaction in that test. There's no reaction in the pro shuttle. There's no reaction in the three cone drill. Yes, they do give you an idea of how a player handles, you know, himself, you know, carries this, changes the approach, all that stuff. But the bottom line is, Neil, those kids test. I mean, they go through that over and over and over and over again. To, you know, it's a science now preparing for the combine. But what you don't get is a feel for how that player is going to react on the field to another player's movement. Now, the individual position drills, I think, are more relevant, where you see coaches actually working with the player and directing them through a series of movements. That, I think, really does have relevancy.
All right, we're going to move on now to our state of the franchise then. We're going to begin with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They were the team of the summer on Hard Knocks, and everyone was excited about what Jameis Winston would bring to the table, and they were pretty poor for much of the year. 5-11 on the season, last in the NFC South. When you look at their numbers across the board, Jeff, so let's just have a look. Offense was 9th overall, 4th in passing, but 27th in rushing. Defense was a real problem. They were last in total defense in the NFL, 23rd against the run, last in passing, last on third down, last in sacks, last in yards per play. When you look at where you start with this team, really, and for me, it's 23rd in rushing, and they didn't really have an answer at running back. Peyton Barber led the team in rushing with 423 yards. And on defense, where's the pass rush? Because Gerald McCoy from up the middle had 6 sacks. There's nothing else, Jeff. Nothing on the edges. So, you know, lots of places where this team has to get better. They had, what was it? They had $71 million to spend in free agency. If we look at what the Buccaneers added, they lost Doug Martin, the running back. He goes to the Raiders. Really, they didn't add overly too much, Jeff. They did try and address the defensive line. Bo Allen from Philadelphia, Mitch Unrein from Chicago, Vinnie Curry from the Eagles. They lose Chris Baker and Robert Ayers from the defensive line. So I don't know whether they've got better in free agency, which means a big draft coming up for the Bucs.
Yeah, and again, I think you look at the Bucs, Neil, and let's talk about the one thing that those statistics that you rattled off really indicate. If you can't run the football and you can't stop the run, what does that say about the kind of team you are? Mm. You're not tough.
Yep.
And I think you're not mentally tough and you're not physically tough enough. And I think that's the issue that you have with that football team, and you know, that's kind of a little bit the when Dirk Cutter was the head coach at Arizona State, he had some good football teams. We played them in a bowl game when I was at Hawaii, and you know, they came in, rolled in as the Pac-12 team and all that stuff, and we just pounded them, and they were athletic and they were pretty to look at in their uniforms, but I tell you what, when the play started, they didn't show up. And so I think this is a team that obviously has to get better up front. It has to get better in how they approach the game too. And I think that means they got to commit themselves more to the run, and they got to find ways to get to the passer and stop the run on defense.
Jameis Winston threw for 3,504 yards at quarterback, 19 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, a quarterback rating of 92.2. Jeff, I remember him last season as much for that horrible pregame speech where he's trying to eat his fingers and trying to fire up the troops. I don't know if he really grew into the leader he kind of thinks he is. Look, I mean, where are you on Jameis Winston? Because those numbers at first glance are not bad.
I'm with Jameis Winston, exactly where I was with Jameis Winston when we were talking about him for the draft. I just
not progressed.
Not a big fan. I don't think he's accurate enough. I don't think his decision making is good enough. Obviously the video piece you talk about, the soundbite that you talk about, gives you an indication of what you're dealing with. I mean, I'm watching his own teammates are standing there incredulous, just wondering, what are you talking about? And so that's not exactly what you want out of your leader. So, I think this is a team that's not good enough, and I don't see them, frankly, with all that money to spend, Neil, I don't see them moving, in a direction that they need to move fast enough to keep Dirk Cutter in the job next year. I think he's one of the guys that's going to really be on the hot seat when September, October, and November roll around.
Well, Jeff, I thought he was on the hot. I'm surprised he made it back, because I thought he was going to go last year at the end of the season, and there was talk of John Gruden potentially making a return to Tampa. I think Dirk Cutter's biggest boost of last year was the fact that John Gruden chose to go to the Raiders, because I think it saved him.
Yeah, it might have been the case. And I think that what's interesting is, Dirk Cutter got that job over Lovie Smith. They fired Lovie and promoted Dirk to the head coaching job because of his supposed relationship with Jameis Winston. And that got rocky towards the end of the year too. So, it doesn't look very good in Tampa Bay.
Uh, J- Jameis Winston has plenty of targets to throw the ball to, Jeff. When you look at the names on the roster, Mike Evans signed a contract extension in the offseason. DeSean Jackson, probably want more out of him, just 50 catches his first year with Tampa Bay. Adam Humphries had 61 catches out of the slot. You've got a couple of tight ends in Cameron Brait and O.J. Howard. I mean, there's enough passing game targets there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, they finished fourth in an NFL in passing. Mm. But again, you don't get to the playoffs by, you know, finishing fourth in the league in passing. You got to play defense. You got to run the football a little bit, too. You got to play complementary football. And they didn't at all. And, yeah, they've got plenty of offensive weapons at receiver. They just not good enough up front on the offensive line. And, you know, Doug Martin was a disappointment. And that's why he's done, you know, I'm sure they let him walk. And, you know, go to the Raiders, because, you know, here's a guy that's got, he's been in trouble a couple of times for a drug thing, and then, you know, it isn't productive, and, you know, so I, how much of it's Doug Martin, I don't, can't tell you, but I know this, that they didn't block very well.
Jeff, where do you think they need, obviously pass rush is a is a big thing that they need to address. They've got Vernon Hargreaves, and Brent Grimes was re-signed at cornerback, but you look at most draft articles that relate to the Buccaneers, they talk about a need in the secondary. Do you still see that being an area of concern?
Yeah, because here's the first thing. You said Brent Grimes. Remember now, Brent Grimes is one of the last of the NFL Europe kids out there.
What does right? that tell you? That tells you he's been around
the world. It tells me he's in his mid-30s. That's what it tells me.
Yeah.
So that's an indication. I thought Hargreaves played at times pretty doggone good and showed, you know, some of the reason why they took him. But I think they've got to find a corner. But this is a team that's got holes all over the place. Mm. And, you know, again, they got to address the toughness issue. They got to address, you know, ability to block up front. And again, secondary is another area. You know, they get T.J. Ward. T.J. Ward didn't even look like the T.J. Ward of the past. Mm. You know, I mean, they thought that was going to be a big help at safety because they're not great at safety. And, you know, T.J. Ward had been a physical, really good safety at Denver, and it looked like it was somebody impersonating him wearing his jersey.
Jeff, as we look at the Bucs then, and we look at our arrow up, down, or sideways, we have to bear in mind they are in a very tough division in the NFC South, the division that sent the other three teams to the playoffs last year. So it's going to be very hard. Are they finished in their struggles, or are you an arrow down? You're not too hot on the Buccaneers at the moment. Where do you have them in your up, down, or sideways?
Well, again, you know, because of the fact that they had $71 million to spend and didn't, you know, I mean, Vinny Curry's a good football player.
Right.
Mitch Unrein's a run stopper. He's not going to, I mean, those are guys. They're not, you know, they're not dynamic signings. So, you know, are they going to draft well enough to make a jump in that division? Hard to do it with rookies, so I'm going to say arrow down.
All right. I don't think they lose more than more than 11 games this year. I don't think they're much improved either, though, so I'm going to say arrow sideways. Jeff, when I was doing my live blog for Sky Sports on the opening night of free agency, it got to about 10:30 UK time, and I was supposed to kind of do it for another 30 minutes or so. And then the signing of Mitch Unrein was unveiled. And I was like, I just went on to the blog and said, I am not going to report on Mitch Unrein. Good night. And that was it. that was my limit. That was the limit. Let's move on to the Chicago Bears then, because already a team in transition and a big change. So they were 5-11 as well last year. It cost John Fox his job. They had a decent amount of money, not as much as the Bucks. To spend, they had $50 million to spend in free agency, and spend it they have, because they've tried to bring in people to help their young rookie quarterback, who was a rookie last year, Mitchell Trubisky. So you bring in Allen Robinson at wide receiver, Taylor Gabriel, who we assume will operate in the slot from Atlanta, Trey Burton, who we've not really seen that much of in Philadelphia, behind Zach Ertz and Brent Celek, and then Cody Parkey gets added as a kicker. Chase Daniel, a very important backup quarterback to Mitchell Trubisky. And I guess, Jeff, most importantly, as we start to look at the Chicago Bears, an offensive coach in Matt Nagy from the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, I think you can take all of those away, Neil,
just focus on one guy.
Go on.
They lost Mitch Unrein.
It's true. It's a difference maker. Oh, dear. If Mitch Unrein walks in here right now, he's going to be very upset with you and I.
He's gonna punch you in the face and see what kind of reaction he gets.
Yeah. Do you know what reaction he'll get? I'll probably fall asleep on the floor. Jeff, those are the additions, you know, actually. What? Let me just reel off some of the losses, because obviously there's a yin to every yang, and there's some losses that come out of Chicago. I think the most notable one is probably Josh Sitton on the offensive line. He goes to Miami, the guard. But they also cut Pernell McPhee, they cut Willie Young, they cut Jarrell Freeman, they cut Quinton Demps at safety. They re-signed Prince Amukamara at corner and re-signed Kyle Fuller. So lots of change in Chicago. And yeah, Matt Nagy's, I don't know, what do you make of Matt Nagy, what he's going to bring to the team, Jeff?
I think that's positive. I think he's going to be a guy that, you know, can help, you know, kind of update the offense.
Yeah.
Foxy was still operating under the premise that we're going to run the ball, you know, play defense, and, you know, win them in all in the fourth quarter. And you can do that if you're dominant on defense, which they're not. And, you know, I think they've got weapons, and I like what they've done to go out and help that young quarterback, because Trey Burton, to me, Neil, while we haven't seen much of him, when you watch him play, and I remember watching him practice last summer, and I thought that kid's got some real ability. I think this is an opportunity for him to be a big impact guy, because he can now go to Chicago and be that, you know, move tight end. Mm. You know, you've got to remember where Nagy comes out of. They like those kinds of guys. So I think he's a great fit for that offense and a great fit for the quarterback, because young quarterbacks, one of their favorite guys is a tight end. It's dependable and can, you know, work the short zones and get in the middle against two deep and all that stuff, which all are things, you know, that he can do, so Burton can do. So I like that signing a great deal. And, you know, I was going to ask you, because you've had a chance to sit down and talk to Robinson a great deal, as Jacksonville at time. What's your take on that? Because I really like that kid. I think good player.
Yeah, I mean, I think when healthy, he's a true number one. I think the year he kind of broke out in the NFL and he had that 1,400-yard receiving season, I'd watched him in minicamp that year, Jeff, and I think I came back and I said to you, he reminded me of Dez Bryant when Dez was at the top of his game. He could win jump balls, he could stretch the field. I mean, he's been accused of being a one-trick pony, but there's a lot of number one receivers around the NFL that get accused of being that. So I think he can be everything that you want in a number one receiver, and that's what they've been missing in Chicago for a few years now. And I think he gives them that. I think Taylor Gabriel is going to be a nice addition as well. So yeah, if Robinson is back fully healthy, I think he's a loss for the Jags, and I think he's a nice addition to the Bears. And you talk about friends of a young quarterback, a good running game is that friend as well, and you've got that with Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. They combined for 1,500 yards, and Jeff Cohen added 53 catches out of the backfield as well. So I like what the Bears have done in that aspect, because if you're going to be bold, they gave up a lot, didn't they, to go up and get Trubisky. You might as well make that young quarterback as comfortable as possible.
Sure, you got to, you know, again, that helps you justify moving up to get him. You got to put weapons around him, and I think they have. And, you know, when I remember when you and I sat and talked to Robinson at the Super Bowl, Neil, that for our show, and I was impressed with his answers, the way he handled himself. You know, kid out of Detroit, goes to Penn State, you know, and was a little undervalued as a college receiver, goes in and, you know, at least that day, he said all the right things to me, as, you know, made me say, this is a young kid that's got it figured out a little bit.
Mm. What did you make of Trubisky, Jeff? I mean, I guess we saw flashes.
I would say that. I think that's a fair evaluation, flashes. Now, if you look at the tape, Neil, first couple of games, he didn't have to do very much at all. I mean, they had obviously coached him dumbed it down for him and coached him into, you know, some really, really simple stuff. And but what you saw was the athleticism that we saw on the tape at North Carolina. We saw the arm that we saw on the tape at North Carolina. And then you also saw some of the youngness. Because remember now, this, if you go back on Mitchell Trubisky, he did not play a great deal in college. Mm. But he had the athletic ability. He had the arm. He had the smarts. But it's going to take him a couple years. And I think the Bears are doing the right thing by, you know, surrounding him with great players, not giving him, you know, not giving him too much to do. And then, you know, I think, you know, you got Taylor Gabriel who can make dynamic plays. You got a big guy in Robinson. You know, you got a move tight end in Burton. You got two good running backs. I think the Sitton loss, that hurts. Hmm. That one does hurt. And you're going to have to find a way to replace him because he's a good football player.
Offense was 30th in the NFL, 16th in rushing. They were dead last in passing, so lots of room for improvement on offense. But defense, Jeff, was pretty good. 10th overall, 11th against the run, 7th against the pass. So do you expect that to continue in 2018?
Yeah, I think they're continuing to. Because you got to remember now, when Foxy went in there, they were a mess on defense.
Yeah,
I mean,
they were.
They were absolutely a mess. And it's taken them 3 years to, you know, to get it pointed in the right direction. But they got good coaches there. They got some good young players. They kept Fuller, which I think – I'm not a big Prince fan, but,
no.
Again, I do like Fuller. And I think that was a key signing. I think Akamura is probably a third corner, so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they take another one in the draft.
Do you think this is a team that's improving? I feel like they're on the rise, Jeff, because I feel like the defense – was good, and you just needed to give some weapons to Trubisky. I would say it's an arrow up team.
I agree with you, Neil, and I think if they have a good draft, now, again, you're talking about a really salty division.
Yes.
But, you know, if they have a good draft, the Bears could be an 8-win, 9-win football team.
Well, you talk about salty division, that's what could become the NFC West now with the 49ers. Looking like they might reemerge. You've got the Rams, of course, and the Seahawks there, and the Cardinals as well in the West. But the 49ers were 6-10, but as you coaches say, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. San Francisco won their last five games with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback, and there's a feel-good factor in the Bay Area because of that. They were 12th overall in total offense, 21st in rushing, 9th in passing. Defense was 24th. They were 22nd against the run, 22nd against the pass, only 26th in quarterback sacks recorded. So maybe that young defense needs to find somebody who can get after the passer. But Jeff, it really all starts with Jimmy G, doesn't it? Because they made him the highest paid quarterback in NFL history, highest paid player in NFL history. He lost that title without ever even stepping on the practice field. He had it for about 3.5 weeks. Before being usurped by Kirk Cousins. But Jimmy G lit a spark under this franchise that has burned so far through the offseason.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about a team, great, Neil, and you're in a division, and let's talk about the division briefly, but you're in a division where obviously the Rams are the kingpin, but Seattle is going through wholesale changes both in the coaching staff and on the playing surface. And, you know, you're looking at an Arizona club that's, you know, got a new coach. They're trying to find their way. They're going to have a new quarterback. A lot of questions in Arizona. They get rid of Tyrann Mathieu. So I think the 49ers are primed to really make a jump. And, you know, like you say, Jimmy G is at the heart of all of it. He has really, you know, just electrified that fan base and changed the, you know, the locker room. In the locker room, he's a leader, he's positive, he's tough, he's, you know, all you want in a quarterback.
Jeff, I think when you look at, I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about Garoppolo in a second. I think when we had that Jags game against the 49ers on Christmas Eve, and he impressed us all the way through that with not only all the arm strength, the ability to make all the throws, but just the poise. I think the poise under pressure, that ability to stand up against a tough defense like the Jags and then kind of shred them apart. I think that was very impressive. When you look at the five wins at the end of the year, you could argue well, that didn't mean too much. It was the end of the year. But then you should look and actually say, well, what a job by Kyle Shanahan, because you will know that that's so tough to drag wins out of a team like that at the end of the year when it's been going wrong and when it's been a horrible season. You know, guys would start mailing it in on some teams, but let's talk about the job that Kyle Shanahan has done as head coach, because even early in the year when they were losing those games, he was drawing up some very nice plays that were kind of ending up with the ball on the floor. The execution wasn't there. I think they've got a really good answer at quarterback now, and I think they've got a very good answer at head coach.
I agree, and I think that, you know, you look at his history, and, you know, obviously he just didn't have anybody that could execute what he wanted done early in the season. And then, you know, it was interesting, Neil, when they traded for him, they didn't play him right away. Mm. They let him get his feet underneath him, and I think what a great move. When you talk about Shanahan, you can't say Shanahan without saying Lynch at the same time, because I think they're that much, you know, lockstep on this deal.
Yeah.
And I think that they really said, you know, let's get him prepared. Let's get him, you know, comfortable with what we're doing. Let's lock him in. Let him get to know his teammates a little bit before we roll him out there, because you're talking about a fan base that not too long ago was used to hoisting the Lombardi Trophy.
Yeah.
It's gotten really bad in the Bay Area.
Oh, empty seats. Empty seats every week.
Pardon?
Empty seats every week, Jeff. It's a horrible look for the 49ers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, and you know, you got a new stadium, you can't fill it, and, you know, it just was so much pressure on the kid. And I think that's a really something nobody ever talks about is, he came in when they were, like, desperate, and I mean desperate, for something good. And that's a lot of pressure on a young quarterback, mm-hmm. and he handled it extremely well. So, I think this is a definite arrow-up team. And you talk about the pass rush deal, their pass rush will get better because they got Richard Sherman playing on one of the corners.
Yeah, if Sherman's fully healthy, that makes a big difference. Let's have a look at some of the ins and outs. Of the 49ers, they added Jerick McKinnon at running back, who could be that kind of Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman type that was so successful in Kyle Shanahan's offense in Atlanta. Weston Richburg is the new center coming in from the New York Giants. They allowed Daniel Kilgore to leave and go to Miami. He was traded to Miami not long after he'd signed a new contract. They lost Carlos Hyde. Aaron Lynch and Elvis Dumervil was cut. Sherman's a big addition on defense as well. Jeff, just looking at other moves the 49ers made, they extended Marquise Goodwin's contract at wide receiver. So they're starting to put the pieces together. I mean, I think it's an arrow up team for sure. They're 6-10. I'm looking forward to the years of potential rivalry with the Rams. Kyle Shanahan against Sean McVay, Jimmy Garoppolo and Jared Goff. I mean, it feels like it could be a revitalized old school from the 80s rivalry of the Rams and 49ers.
I agree, and I think the 49ers are relevant again. And it's been a long time, you know, since we've said that. You know, that this is a team that people are going to have to pay attention for. This is a team that you better come to play, and if you're gonna play them on the road or at home. And I think that this is a team who has a definite arrow up in a division where two of their division opponents are, in my opinion, arrow down teams. So,
yep.
Obviously, that San Francisco Los Angeles natural rivalry that exists, and it's big in baseball between the Dodgers and the Giants. It's big in basketball, you know, between the Lakers and the Warriors, and now it's going to be big again in football. I think that's great.
Sherman's going to be an interesting one to watch, isn't he, Jeff? Because if he is the Richard Sherman of old, then, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see what he can do to help that defense. And because they've got a lot of young players on the defensive line. Arik Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas. They've invested players up front, big players up front, who can make a difference if they're given the help on the back end. And it's also interesting that Sherman is in the same division as the Seahawks, because he said, I'm feeling vengeful. I think it's going to be very interesting, those two games between San Francisco and Seattle.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be must-watch TV, because he just you know, not only am I listening, I'm interested in seeing what, watching him play. I'm interested in hearing what he has to say too, because, you know, Richard's never been shy about voicing his opinion about anything. And you know, it's great. It's a great move for the 49ers. Here's a Sam, you know, here's a California kid who went to Stanford right next door. You know, obviously Lynch is very, very comfortable with him. They've known each other for a long time. Lynch is a Stanford grad too, and you know, those guys are thick as thieves. So I think they see in Richard Sherman a guy who's going to add some veteran savvy, some leadership, and some little nastiness to that defense, a little swagger to that defense, which, you know Robert Saleh's crew needs it.
Jeff, you know what it's like when you're a trendy pick. Sometimes expectations are too high. Are the 49ers a genuine playoff contender for this coming season? Remember, the NFC is absolutely loaded. Or are they a kind of, I mean, the 6 wins last year, are they an 8-9 win team that's another year away from the postseason? Or can they make that playoff noise as early as next season?
Well, first of all, Neil, in terms of me knowing what it's like to be a trendy pick, that's not exactly true, because when I was a baby and they brought me to my mother at, you know, hours old, she looked at me and said, can you take him back and give me another one? So I'm not exactly...
This one's going to be a problem. I can sense it.
No, I know what you're saying. I think that, yeah, it is easy to say, because you want to see him succeed. You want to see that, you know, the glory days. You know, you see that iconic uniform, those gold helmets, and you know, they come out of the tunnel and they just haven't played like the 49ers of old. And, you know, Jesse Cipolla is a friend of mine. Jesse, you know, has 2 Super Bowl rings from his time in San Francisco and legendary player there. And there's a real sense of pride amongst those old 49ers about, you know, having played on those teams and been part of that, those dynasties in the Bill Walsh era. And I think I think the fan base feels that way too. And I think that the fan base in the UK, because I think there's an awful lot of 49er fans in the UK, and I think that they're all looking for that team to, you know, show signs of being back.
Yeah, it's going to be, absolutely, it's going to be exciting to watch the 49ers this coming season. 6 wins a year ago, but I think they're certainly a team on the rise. Let's take some questions in the mailbag just to finish off this week. Jeff, here's one from Jonathan Ricketts, who said, did the Buffalo Bills do the right thing trading the first quarterback in 19 years to get them to the playoffs? I mean, I guess it's all the Bills they've certainly shown their hand as they head towards the NFL draft. Whether they can pull off a deal that gets them one of those first-round quarterbacks remains to be seen. But they traded away Tyrod Taylor. They do have A.J. McCarron as their security blanket. They were never fully committed to Tyrod, were they, Jeff? That's why we saw Nathan Peterman halfway through the season.
You know, Neil, you and I and Rob have talked about that issue with Tyrod Taylor and how there was, you know, pressure from ownership on down, not to move him, but just they just didn't seem satisfied with him in Buffalo. And he was kind of an unpopular pick, you know. And, you know, Rex has said the same thing, that he had, you know, his constant pressure from above to replace him. We saw what happened when they, you know, put Peterman in last year. I think the Bills have really put themselves in a perilous situation. And, you know, so, again, it'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out.
All right, here's one from Broncos GB. They say, after last year's record-breaking yardage in the Super Bowl, do you think teams will move away from the defense wins championships mantra? What do you think, Jeff? I mean, is that really a real thing nowadays, with emphasis on quarterbacks?
Well, in all respect to our buddy Sean Gale, who, you know, that's his mantra, and I understand you've got to get stops on defense now. It's a different kind of day, though. You're not going to dominate with the rules the way they are, and the game played the way it's played, and officiated the way it's officiated. I don't see dominant defenses very often anymore. So what your defense has got to do, it's got to get you stops and it's got to get you turnovers. And if it can do that and rush the passer, then you're going to be okay. Statistically, you may not be great, but you got to get stops at key times. And I think that, you know, the game now is moved in another direction. It's an offensive game. It's a quarterback-driven game, and it's a passing game-driven, you know, offense in particular.
All right, last one, Jeff. You can deliver a reality check to Jack Humphrey, because you've just given your assessment of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Jack has asked you, could the Bucs be one draft pick away from making the playoffs? I fancy Saquon Barkley to land there, making the offense very good. I also like the defensive moves made. Jeff, are Tampa Bay one draft pick away from making the playoffs?
Only if Jesus Christ enters the draft.
Oh my, I don't even know where to go with that one, so I'm just gonna... let's take one more, just so we don't end on that note. Let's have a look through here. So Tom Marshall asks about time for Patriots to trade Rob Gronkowski. What do we think? We talked about that. Let's have a look. This one from Wesley Sizem, Jeff, asks, if you were the Giants, what would you accept for Odell Beckham Jr.? And I guess, would you even trade him away if you're the Giants?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, I think the Giants have made it clear that, you know, when the ownership people start talking about, you know, hey, we're trying to get better, and everybody's on notice, and that they're talking about his behavior and, you know, wearing out his welcome. If you can get enough for him, yeah, I would trade him. And, you know, again, I've talked about that kid numerous times. I love his ability. I love his athletic ability. I actually like the kid. But some of the behaviors I'm not a big fan of. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to change a culture on a team that, you know, has struggled. And so I think the reality of today's NFL, Neil, is there are very, very, very few who are non-tradable, and usually those guys are quarterbacks.
What will it take, though, Jeff? A first and a third? A first and a fifth? I mean, it's got to be a first-rouner somewhere in there, isn't there?
I think there's got to be a first and either another established player, and I'm talking about a good player, a star player,
mm-hmm.
or a second or third. I don't think they would trade him for anything less than that.
All right, one last one, Jeff, just really quickly. Stephen has reached out on Twitter, said, I just listened to last week's Inside the Huddle podcast, and we talked, Jeff, about how the NFL are going to investigate. They're not doing away with kickoffs as it stands right now, but they are going to investigate kickoffs and the safety of them, and if they can't find an answer, then we surmised last week that that's probably something that could happen in 2019 season, that we no longer see kickoffs in the NFL. And Stephen asks, and this is something the NFL have to consider, Jeff. He said, what happens to onside kicks if kickoffs are removed from the game? There goes your chance to get back into a game if you're two scores down.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's going to change the game dramatically. And, you know, I mentioned to you, Neil, that in the CFL, the team after a field goal has the opportunity to either take the ball at the 35-yard line or receive the kick.
Mm.
That's valid until the last 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. Any field goal or any score in the last 3 minutes, the team has to elect to return the ball.
Right.
So that you can't, you know, deny the team's opportunity to recover an onside kick. So it's something that they can work with, but again, it's something that's certainly going to demand an awful lot of attention, a lot of conversation in the competition committee.
All right. Well, that's certainly one to keep an eye on. We are out of time for this week's Inside the Huddle. We'll be back next week to wrap up all the news that's taken place in the NFL and to continue our State of the Franchise series as we move closer to the NFL draft, which is in Dallas on April the 26th. Jeff, until then, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha kakou, which means aloha to you and I.
Nice. Mixing it up. Nice. Well, that's it. Jeff told you. Goodbye.
Aloha.